Civilians in Syria once again in harm's way, and the international community wonders once again today if the Syrian government ever intended to seriously comply with that United Nations brokered pause this week in the hostilities. UN envoy Kofi Annan, speaking from the region, continues to try and sound hopeful.
I believe it's a bit too early to say that the plan has failed. The plan is still on the table and is a plan we are all fighting to implement. It's a plan the council has endorsed. It's a plan the Syrians have endorsed.
And the UN envoy, who has worked doggedly to get pro-Syrian Security Council members Russia and China to put pressure on Damascus, reached out today to Syria's strongest ally, Iran.
I'm grateful for the support of Iran, given its special relations with Syria. And I believe Iran can be part of the solution.
Kofi Annan speaking today. Iran, part of the solution. Iran being supportive of this pause in hostilities. We're joined now by Stephen Kinzer, journalist and professor of international relations at Boston University, author of Reset, Iran, Turkey, and America's Future. Stephen Kinzer, welcome to the program.
Always good to be with you, John.
So first of all, describe the Syrian-Iranian relationship. Remind us again how close this relationship is.
Iran really has only one friend left in the neighborhood, and that's Syria. There's a reason why Iran has maintained this relationship, and it's not just strategic. It's also based on religious connections. The minority Alawite regime in Syria is ruled by people who are from an offshoot of Shiism. If that regime remains in power and Iran continues to build its strategic arc, there'll be something like a Shia crescent dominated by Iran that will go all the way from western Afghanistan to the Mediterranean at Lebanon. So this is an important spot for Iran. It needs to keep something friendly in Syria in order to maintain its regional influence.
But you're describing, Stephen Kinzer, a situation where Syria would appear to have all the leverage here. It's not necessarily a moment for Iran to be putting pressure on this friend it needs so badly.
Absolutely correct. It's not realistic to expect that Iran is going to reprimand Syria or try to force Syria to make compromises. The reason that the Assad regime is not serious about negotiating with its opposition is the same reason the United States is not serious about negotiating with Iran. And that is, when you negotiate, you have to give up something substantial. Assad is not yet ready to do that any more than we are ready to do that in negotiations with Iran.
So before we get back to the issue of this ceasefire in Syria and why the Assad regime, aside from obvious reasons that it doesn't want to relinquish power, is not complying or even generating to the international community that it's serious about it, looking inside Iran, what is the danger that a persistent alliance with Syria, given the pictures coming out of Damascus and Homs and some of the other cities where there's been so much violence, are going to fuel an anti-government movement inside Iran that, as we know, flared up a few years back?
I don't sense that Iran is volatile in that sense. The situation in Iran is so different from the situation in these Arab countries that have been affected by the so-called Arab Spring uprisings. And the difference is this. In the Arab world, there's still this utopian idea that if you get rid of one clique of bad leaders, you're all going to live like people in Bermuda. The people in Iran don't believe this. They believed that in 1979. They tried that. They know better than anyone else in the Middle East that no matter how bad your situation is under a brutal government, it can still get worse. So you're not going to see violent upheaval in Iran because the Iranians are post-utopian. They know that doesn't bring something positive in the long run.
Interesting. So looking then back at Syria, who would have thought that this nation, of all the nations in the region, would be clinging to a Cold War-era relationship with Russia? Russia still has a warm water port in Syria, and the basis of that relationship continues to maintain violence on the ground.
Russia has only one friend left in the Middle East, and it's Syria. There's another reason, however, that Russia is maintaining this relationship besides its own particular strategic interest, and that is defensive. I think Russia does not want to see Western powers, and particularly the United States, emerge as dominant in more of the Middle East than it already is. And so the Russians want to maintain Syria, not just for their own strategic interests, but to defend themselves against the expansion of power by America and American allies.
It seems that in many ways, and as the pictures emerge and this ceasefire appears to go down to non-compliance, although we won't know till the end of the week, absolutely, that there's no conceivable winner here. Kofi Annan ends up losing face. The United Nations again showcases its inability to pressure even a nation of the middling status of Bashar al-Assad's regime. And Syria doesn't possibly get a win here, even if Bashar al-Assad stays in power.
You're right. There's no real winner visible in all of this, except for those who like to create upheaval. You can say that al-Qaeda, which is already recruiting people to go to Syria and fight against Assad, benefits from this upheaval. But besides winners, let's think about losers. The United States still has a chance not to be a loser in this fight. If we begin to become more deeply involved and become explicitly allied with the Syrian opposition, whatever that is, we could wind up a much bigger loser than we will be otherwise.
So what's to become of the opposition in Syria if this fighting continues and if it ends up like Iran, where the protesters go back home?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Assad regime's days are numbered. I don't know if it'll be in 5 years or in 5 weeks. But the family business model is finished in the Middle East. The Gaddafi family is gone. You're going to start seeing this in other parts of that region. The Assad family regime is still a relic of history. It's going to be replaced by something that might not be what we like. It might even be worse. But the model of one family running a country over generations is really coming to an end in the Middle East. And what we're seeing in Syria, among other things, is a reflection of that.
It came to an end, of course, in Libya, as you mentioned, and that country has at least so far stayed together. Do you think a departure of the Assad regime in Syria will be an integral Syria that survives, or is it going to be broken up?
I think it's quite likely Syria could survive. The question is, who's going to come to power? We will see a regime that may be more democratic, but will not respect human rights, because in that part of the world, democracy and human rights often don't go together. They're enemies. And we may see that again with a new regime in Syria.
All right. A scenario not unlike what's going on in Egypt right now, as the country of Egypt moves tentatively towards democracy. Stephen Kinzer, journalist and professor of international relations at Boston University, author of Reset, Iran, Turkey, and America's Future. Thanks so much, Stephen.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.